Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hi, Mitchie. Oh, my goodness.
What the fuck another was that? Anyway, that wasn't that one of those circus songs?
Yes, it was a circus.
It was one of the clowns. Bit of a circus here today, wasn't it?
It has been, actually. It really has been. But this is really exciting because we get to talk to somebody who has been... Oh, I don't know. How long have we known you? Anyway, we get to talk to Nicola Caddy. We're really excited to speak to you today, Nicola. Welcome to Dorothy and the Dealer.
Thank you. This is a lifetime dream of mine.
Nicola Caddy from AA.
No.
From AA, yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so Nicola, you're based in WA. You're based, where are you exactly? Mandurah area?
Bunbury. I'm in Bunbury.
Sunny Bunny.
How long have we known you, Nicola? It's been a long time.
Yeah. It's a question you guys keep asking me, but I think 2010.
Right.
Maybe 2011.
Yeah. Nah, it feels like I've known you longer than that.
It's longer than that.
But I'll trust your judgment on
that. It's a long time.
All right. Well, you know how this goes, Nicola. Your favourite song before we start our official podcast.
Well, this is not my favourite song.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
It's particularly the song going around in my head at the moment is Rocket Man. That's the one. And the reason is not because of the song, but we finally watched the movie.
How good was it?
Do you know what? I still haven't watched it yet. I need to go
it
and
was
do that.
Pretty
I mean,
good.
I thought we were dragging our feet. It was so good and so inspiring.
Mm.
And the end of it was amazing. And I just, yeah, so every time I think about that movie, the ending where he talks about how
don't
he has
give it away, don't give
drunk,
it away.
Yeah. It's not. No, okay, good, everyone's good. Seen it.
Not me.
Where they all die. You mean where they all die again?
No, where he shows so much resilience in his life and has maintained that resilience. It resonated with me in such a strong way.
I remember reading interviews with him years ago, and he was doing like an ounce of cocaine a day.
Yes.
A day. That's a fucking lot of cocaine. Like, holy shit.
A lot.
And I should know.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm not a joke. That's a terrible thing to say. No, that's not true. But I mean, if there's one thing you know about Elton John, by Christ, it was a big, tough job for him to be able to maintain abstinence for as long, especially in the surroundings that he has, especially where he's immersed, you know, and who he is.
I need to watch him.
But it was just such a, you know, I just wanted to go and put on drag clothes.
It doesn't take a movie to do that.
Which is a normal Friday night.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was absolutely fantastic. I absolutely loved it. I really, really loved it.
I still haven't seen it.
I mean, I don't think it was as good as Freddie's movie.
Yes, the...
But I got it. But I definitely got
Bohemian Rhapsody.
I definitely got a. You know what it was that turned me off watching it originally was the fact that it was a musical. I'm not into musicals. I'm like, oh, yeah. It's a musical. I'd rather
I think the progression of how he starts out in the AA meeting.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And then how he progresses through that and the changes and the costume changing, and that was. You could really see that they were doing inner child work.
Yeah.
And at the end when he did that little inner child thing. And
it was
and then they stated that he'd been sober for 28 years. Yeah. I thought, wow. That just shows so much resilience particularly for that industry.
But also I think I loved how, you know, how it really brought to the forefront, you know, it went into what you go through when you're in NA, AA, or any of those places where they literally deal with, okay, we need to look at your parents. We need to look at your upbringing. We need to look at what happened. How did you see your mother? How did you see your father? And, of course, it's from his eyes of how he saw them and how then that had such a profound effect on him, both positively and negatively. You know, it was ultimately he really got it in the end. It was a fucking great
movie. I feel like I'm missing out. I need to go watch
great
it now.
Movie.
But let's talk about Nicola instead of talking about Elton John, shall we?
I was really enjoying that.
Okay, so you met us around about 2010, give or take then. So talk to us about what led you to us and where you were, where your life was, how life was and what's happened since?
I had a friend who did she did the first process.
Yeah,
relationships and you. Yeah. And she came back and she was just going on and on and on about it. And like to the point where I was just like going, oh, for God's sake, will you just stop?
Mm.
And then something happened in our lives. We had a falling out with my sister.
Right.
Between Lindsay and her and I. And he just was devastated and he couldn't get past it. And in the end he decided that he would go and do relationships and you. And he came back like his mind was completely blown. It was like somebody had removed him and given me a new husband. It was amazing. He got really clear on himself. And from my point of view, he kept saying, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. At first he rang me and he said, Nicola, this stuff's crazy. These people are weird. And then this was halfway through the seminar, which I know he wasn't meant to do, but anyway, he did. And then he came home and he's like, you should do this. And I said, I don't really feel like I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't push me or anything. Anyway, then my friend, she signed us up for Mastermind Money.
Right.
And we all went, like there was a few of us that all went as a group.
Mm-hmm.
And I did Mastermind of Money and that completely blew my mind, that whole concept, like everything about it. So after I finished it, I came home and I put all of the wealth principles in place.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first thing I did. And even then I still wasn't, no, I'm not doing it. I don't feel like I need to go and do the relationships and new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, were you? You didn't register at Mastermind of Money?
No. Wait,
you're like, no, I don't need this. I'll just do the money thing.
Yeah, I'll just do the money
thing. It would have been the money thing that dragged you along there in the first place.
100%.
Yeah, well, of course it was. I love money. So I came and I did that and then I did a couple of the other free things.
Yeah.
And I was really focusing.
You were getting your money's worth.
Oh, yeah, I got my money's worth. So I did a few of the other free things and then after a while, Something happened between me and I think my brother, family problems. Anyway, I thought, you know what, I will do it. So I just rang up one day and said I'd like to book in to do it. And I booked in and I did the relationships and you, and I really enjoyed that. Came out of it and really got clear on my mum. I went in there thinking that I would get clearer on my dad, but I got clearer on my mum, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And after that, I signed up for everything.
Yeah, you were a sponge after that.
I just went through the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And the my favourite one is letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. When we did the letting it go and we got to learn how to do the process ourselves, I really felt like, that was when it all clicked. I don't really particularly feel like it clicked for me at relationships in you.
Mm-hmm.
It clicked at letting it go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's different, you know. Like I think people have expectations if they've heard other people talk about like a big, like loud kind of moment. And for me it wasn't like that. It was really quiet and soft and it was a dominoing effect after relationships in you. And then letting it go when you get a chance to do it and take it on board for yourself, it's a totally different, like you feel empowered because you're getting the tools for yourself, you know, which is really, really cool.
But I also think that some people are able, like you're a bit like me, you're a control freak, right?
Yes.
So it's like when somebody's trying to control you, it's like no.
Well, yes.
And it's not, and I don't think, I mean, you can perceive that that's what's happening, but it's actually not what's happening. And I think in letting it go, you know, when you did it a long time ago, it was a 2-day event, now it's a 3-day event. But one of the things we wanted to be able to do in letting it go was be able to show them everything that has happened right from when we met to where they are now. Does that make sense? And letting it go really helps. It's where you are responsible for your own perturbation. You are responsible for your own pressure to get yourself to get it and see it. And when it, for some people, when you hand responsibility over for them and they're really able to take that responsibility and go, okay, I understand what you guys are handing me here and I know that it's important for me to get this right. And because you're really – one of the things about Nicola Mills is she's really fucking thorough.
Yeah, 100%.
If she sits down, she's going to do something.
Correct.
Nicola will go – if she says, yeah, I'm going to do it,
yeah, no,
she'll
she doesn't.
Go and do it.
Well,
so I think that that was really a good fit for you in letting it go, the fact that, it was actually handed to you, you know. And you're, because I mean, it, and it all depends on what sort of upbringing we come from. If it's a high pressure, high drive situation with competitiveness and da 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 in our childhood, and we're having to compete, and you know, we're able to handle the outward pressure. And but when it, when it's handed to us and we have to create our own pressure, because letting it go really works from the inside out. Relationships in you works from the outside in. And when we're that that perturbation is handed over to us, it's a different experience.
Yeah,
you know?
100%. About to sneeze here.
You okay?
Try not to do
don't,
that on
don't sneeze on that mic.
The mic. Hang on one sec. And no, it's
that
not coming now. Okay. So then, though, you kind of disappeared off the face of the earth for a while. We didn't see you for ages. You came through and did some stuff. And next minute, it's like, I don't know, 7 years has gone past, and next minute, Nicola's back at Mastermind of Money again.
Yeah.
And
I used to come to Mastermind and Money quite often, but I just used to hide in the background.
Right.
Yeah.
And then one day I'd been working with some other coaches and they could teach me. What I found is that I learned a lot about the practical parts of doing business and things like that, but not the actual emotional. It's my husband.
Hi,
he
Lindsay.
Knows I'm doing this. No, he's just done
wants
that.
To come in. He just wants to come in.
Get this little bit of
life. It's all right.
So it was, I could learn the practical part, but there was always like this emotional bit where I couldn't, even though I always have done the work, I've always done the equilibrations, I just felt like I needed something else. I felt like I needed to reconnect with the place that I'd learnt this stuff in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's why I came back and pressured you. To take me as a private client.
Well, she kind of.
But I want to give you my money, is what I said to you, Mitch. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm going to see if you're a right fit for us.
But I mean, here's the thing, you know, like I say with people all the time, you know, especially because you do the Evolve program as well. One of the great lines out of Mike, because people come and they hire business coaches, you know. And one of the great lines I learned from Mike, and Mike is such a fucking great trainer. He's very, very good at what he does. And one of the things I watched him do with one of the clients not a long time ago when they were registering was we were saying to them, they were like, I want a business coach. And we were like, you don't want a business coach. What do you mean I don't want a business coach? No, you're not looking for a business coach. Why? Well, I want somebody to coach my business. No, because all you're doing is you're paying and buying their limitation. And when you buy their limitation, you're buying their limitation for your limitation. You're negotiating limitations. And so because your coach is limited, and that's why, you know, one of the things we did with everything that we do with relationships in you, right through letting it go, STP, all the coaching, you know, all the ecosystem through Evolve is to be able to give people an ecosystem. Because at the end of the day, one person is not fucking going to get you or your business to where you want to get to. And it's difficult for people to get their head around that. And that's why notoriously coaching, business coaching systems fail over time, because the minute the coach leaves, you're back to your limitation with a little bit of their limitation still, and that wanes because you're focusing on a fucking diminishing asset, and that wanes, and then eventually you're back to you again, and now you're pissed off at coaching and you think, oh, none of that coaching stuff works. So you have to have an ecosystem. Everybody, you have to be surrounded by people that are like-minded and want to be able to get to where they want to get to as a team. Does that make sense?
So,
and you're able to cover your blind sides, which I think is super, super important.
So I suppose I want to ask then, Nicola, because I know you said that, you know, when you came back, you wanted the you're big on like finances. Like you're very inspired and very driven to work on your business, to work on your finances, and to this is something I noticed from you right from the beginning, right? And like Mitch said, you just get in and get it done. You know, when it's something to get in and get done, that's what you'll do. What do you think was missing in terms of what you were getting out there that you felt the need to come back and deal with the emotional stuff? What was missing in terms of the Do you understand? Well, like, if you're out there and you're saying, okay, I'm getting business stuff, I'm learning this other stuff, I'm actually even doing my own work because you've learned how to do it and you're doing it yourself. What was the missing piece? What do you think you were looking for that you think that you needed to sort of be immersed again? What was it that you were looking for?
It was 100% accountability.
Right.
And when I came through the STP, it was one of the first things I did when I came back. And I did the STP and I loved it. And I got back into all of the whole basically building out the legacy for where I want to be in my life and where I wanted to be with my business. And I'd sort of started up a startup business, which I'm still working on, and that's what I'm working on in Evolve. But even at that session with the STP, I said to Mitch, you know, like, if you've got another level of training, like, I'll be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think he took that to heart and went, okay, we need to build something.
Mm-hmm.
So not long after that, you guys created the Evolve program.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's exactly what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
The Evolve program, it's been great. I mean, it's not easy.
Oh, it's nothing like, is when you're working on yourself and your business.
Yeah, so, you know, I also felt as though I'd got to a certain level and I kept bumping up against it and I couldn't get past it even though I was doing the work. But I really wanted to bust past where I was, and I feel as though I've done that. Like, going through the processes with Michael has really – like highlighted a lot of the places where we needed to do work in the organisation, which we've done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main one to start with was culture. We had a shocking culture here. So we worked really hard at building out our team values and making sure that when we have our meetings, we're reading our values and we're all on the same page with values, and that we had the right people in the right seats doing the right jobs.
Yeah.
So, and we're still working on that. That's going to be an ever-evolving thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think earlier you were talking about being open and honest in the communication.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just been working on some of that as well with one of the processes that Michael's taught us through Evolve, which is called the decision-making process.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been doing that with Lana, who is one of my employees here. Her and I have had just a couple of days of like going, yeah, what is it we want? Where do we want to take the business? And now how do we do that? But we had to really be open and honest with each other before we could get to that point and go, right, yeah, this is where we're going to go.
Mm-hmm. So that whole, I guess what I'm asking is that with what was out there, that emotional stuff that you needed, like, here's what I think I know what I'm getting at in my own words. When we talk about supply and demand, you know, when we speak to our clients about supply and demand, we're talking about the thing that if you focus on the supply, the demand drops away, right? You've got to put the demand on yourself and the supply follows. By the same token, the supply is what we call our physical quest or the physical reimbursement of funds or, you know, something physical that we can achieve. And then the demand side of that graph is spiritual quest. So you had a clear, for me, this, I'm asking if this is the case, you had a clear understanding of where you wanted to be on a physical plane in terms of what you wanted to have, the finances, the type of business you wanted to have, but the bit that was missing was the spiritual aspect of it, the combining of the understanding of the spiritual aspect of it. And I think people don't get that you can't, like, if you want to grow your net worth, which is the physical side, which is the money, the finances, the success, etc., you have to work on your self-worth to exactly the same degree. And your self-worth cannot be left behind. So the spiritual aspect of that is super important when you want to grow anything in your life. Would you agree? Is that what you were kind of looking for?
Absolutely, yeah. And there wasn't anything out there, you know. I thought maybe I could go to church and, you know, pray to God. That, and I did try that. I mean, I got brought up as a Catholic, so, you know, I did try praying, but that didn't help. And in the meantime, but in that gap, my father had got terminally ill
mm-hmm.
and passed away. And through that whole period, I had been doing equilibrations on my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was a fantastic, lovely guy, but God, he was hard on us. He was really hard on us. He expected a lot from us. So I really wanted to get clear around my dad before he did pass away so that, you know, I wouldn't have any of that, you know, regret. So I'd got to say all the things that I wanted to say to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he did pass away, I knew that was when I needed to come back and reconnect with you guys so that I could learn more about myself. And, you know, I had learned a lot about my innermost dominating thought. But every time you do an equilibration, you get a clear idea of, you know, that situation. But then it just opens up a greater question.
Mm. Yeah.
So then you've got to go to that greater question. And doing that on your own without support gets really hard. Kind of, you kind of, yeah, like, do I really want to do this on my own? I really needed the support, I guess,
yeah,
and accountability to what I wanted to do. And I wanted to achieve some big stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm grateful for, like even just being in this space. Like I get to do the work, but then I also get to be surrounded by other people who are doing the work, and it makes a massive difference, yeah, you know.
The other thing is you also got to make sure you don't – one of the things I think systems allow us to do is not get paralysis by analysis, you know what I mean? Systems allow us – okay, that's what I need to work on. I'll just go and follow the system. That gets me the result at the end. Where a lot of time people in business can get, you know, paralysis by analysis. They think, why the fuck isn't my business going anywhere? It's because your mind is occupied by stuff it shouldn't be. The parts of your brain that are meant to be creative – are locked down in fear, or a lockdown because, you know, you're battling stuff from back there. Because you came from a father that was very business orientated, right? He ran a big ass business, and
both my parents were really, really driven business people.
Yeah, yeah.
Mum was the same.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you can either consciously be caught down in that state of paralysis by analysis, or you can subconsciously be caught down in that state of paralysis by analysis because you subconsciously, you know, don't realize that there's stuff going on, and that's why you're sabotaging things. That's why you're not able to get ahead. You know, that's why you're not able to get the grip on the ground that you need with your company. And a lot of the time people don't think that their subconscious has anything to do with their success. You know, a lot of the time they don't realize that, you know, your history is determining your destiny and your future. And if you don't do anything about how you saw things back there, and if you think you're going to fucking ignore it, you're not, because you're a byproduct of everything that occurred back there. You're a byproduct of your business acumen. The reason you're in business in the first place is because of what happened back there, you know? And if you're unclear about it, well, then that's what's driving you. It's not the clarity that's driving you, because you haven't earned a right to be clear about it. But when you are clear about it, your drive takes off. You lose those loyalties to those stories that you had around what happened when you grew up in a business family with a mom and dad that were super fucking business oriented. You know what I mean? And that's why I think it's so important to be doing your inner work and your outer work, and because they are intrinsically linked. But you know, but if we were to sit down with your dad, right, like right now, and say, "Have you done your inner work?" He'd be like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" He'd think you were bonkers, right? Like, so my dad, I think he's like 900 years old. I'm gonna joke. My dad's about 78 years old now, and so with him, because of who I am and what I do and how you know I bled into the family, but what I'd learned over time, he's able to contemplate that stuff. But old school business people were just, man, get me the axe. Where's the fucking hammer? You know, that's just how they operated in the world. You know,
I bought Dad to Mastermind and Money.
Did you?
Yeah.
No.
I did, and he's like, I can't understand a fucking word this man's saying. He goes, somebody needs to tell him to slow down.
Oh, that's
but he found it fascinating. And, it, you know, by then I think he was like well in his late 70s.
Yeah.
And we met George Focus.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, and he's going, oh, yeah, that sounds all right, Nick. Maybe we should try that. And I'm like, Dad, that's not – I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah, he's going,
maybe we could try it on our own. I went, I don't think so. I don't think I can get my head around that. I've got enough on my plate.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I never realised that. That's pretty cool, man. That's great that you got
He came along. I said, no, come along, Dad. And he's like, yeah, I'll come along. And He stayed for the 2 days, but it was a little bit much for him.
That's good. I knew how to frame it all out so I could keep him in the room.
No, it was me keeping him in the room.
Oh, there you go.
He didn't want to let me down.
So how do you think, you know, growing up, how do you think, based on what you've done and learned, how do you think your business acumen has changed now or evolved? What do you think are some of the significant things that you've see has changed in terms of coming from old school teachers of business to where you are now?
I think definitely cultural issues.
Mm. Yeah.
Are different. You know, like back in the day, you know, I know as a kid, you know, if mum and dad had a problem with someone, they just fired them. There was no discussion of about, you know, what happened or how can we support you better. What are the things that you're not enjoying? That kind of thing. You know, it just was like, well, you're not working out, so we'll just get somebody else, and they could do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And business just came to them. So they didn't really – we were brought up in a small country town, Mora, and they had a few business. They had school buses. They had a supermarket. They had all these businesses in Corral. And this was all happening all at the same time. And – they were just good at business, and the money came, and it just happened. Where now, you know, it would never happen that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to have so many more systems and policies, procedures. You've got to look after your staff. You've got to make sure your culture's working.
Yeah.
You've got to think about all of these things. Where I'm pretty sure Dad just went like, we just took the money down the bank and banked it. and bought more products.
It's a funny thing, you know, like I look at my uncles and, you know, my father used to do business on the side of his job because you had to, because otherwise you never got ahead. You know, you wouldn't eat because you weren't paid enough. So they did these things called Nixers. But a Nixer was like a job on the side that you get paid cash for. But I remember sitting in the pub with my old man, and he'd pull out, you know, cigarette packets, and he'd be standing there and he'd be cutting a deal on the back of a cigarette packet, and then he'd fucking hand the cigarette packet to his mate, you know, and that's how they would move a machine, or it was how they would, you know, that's just how they did it, you know, it was just how they bloody well did it. But definitely nowadays, and I don't know whether it's a good or bad thing, but business is way more interesting now, you know, like it's way more culturally driven. Culture is so fucking important.
Yeah,
100%.
And culture really punched us in the face in the past 12 months. And like, you know, 4 years ago, we were sitting with Dave Logan, who wrote Tribal Leadership, you know, who influenced Tony Hsieh from Zappos.
Which is
all about culture. Those guys were the culture kings, and they were coming out of Silicon Valley. You know, they were educating in Silicon Valley at the time. But still, we were just like, fucking, we're so far behind with this culture thing. Mm. But culture does make the business and the organization more enjoyable. Do you know what I mean? Where, you know, it takes what I've found, the most valuable thing I've got out of it this year is it takes the emotion out of it and makes the issues nuts and bolts. So you're not chasing rainbows and cupcakes and clouds and, oh, you know, I have the feeling that this is going on. Well, fuck off. Tell me exactly what happened. How did it happen? When did it happen? Where did it happen? So don't come to me with that. Come to me with the actual problem, because that's how we will solve it. And it makes the whole organization greater for everybody else. Do you know what I mean? And I think that has been such a fantastic move. You know, in our business, it's just been fantastic. I've loved it. And our whole feeling in our organization is much, much different than how it
100%.
Was.
Yeah, 100%. 100% different.
Yeah, we've found the same thing since we worked with Michael and the Evolve process. And the first thing I knew, we had a cultural problem, and we'd had it for years.
Mm. Was that do you feel like that's partly based on the type of work that you do? Because you guys are in debt collection, right? Do you think that partly to do with maybe not so much with the work, but maybe so much with the connection to the vision and what your outcome is for your clients. Do you know what I mean? Do you think it had anything to do with that, or is it more just pure, you know, culture based? What do you think?
It was pure culture based, because now that we've fixed the issue, one of the issues, the main issue, the team that I've got, I've still got the same team, except for one person left. And now now we're able to have an open discussion and talk about things, and we can set the vision. Where before we tried to set vision and it was always, oh, we don't need to do that. We don't need to worry about that. You know, we're only a small organisation. We don't need to worry about, you know, visions and values and how we treat each other. We, you know, we'll just say what we want. Well, some people did just say what they want, and it wasn't really how things, it wasn't how I wanted the organisation. And we couldn't grow. We just literally couldn't grow. We couldn't even make a decision without without problems occurring. And, you know, that's not to say, I mean, where the issues were coming from came from somebody who had supported me for many, many years, and I, you know, really, really respected that and had a great deal of, respect for that person, but then realised that we got to a certain point that we couldn't get any further.
It's that familiarity builds contempt sort of thing.
Yeah, and it, and you know, that was many, many, many years of working together. And like I said, you know, it was a sad moment, and it was a really, really tough decision.
Yeah.
Really, really tough. It was very emotional for everyone. But now, I mean, I'm sure everyone's in a much better place, including that particular person.
And I think that's also super important.
We don't realise what we rob them of, you know, the potential of what they can do if they leave, you know, and who's missing out on them and what they're missing out on. Then also what you're missing out on if you don't, you know, there's a time and a place. People are meant to be around for a certain time and a place, you know. It doesn't mean that it's going to go on forever, you know.
So yeah, I was really diving deeply into the decision-making process and getting really clear and getting really clear on what the outcomes that we needed as a group and not as individuals.
Yeah.
It wasn't about me. It wasn't about any particular person. It was like, we want to grow and we wanted to make some changes, and we couldn't do that. We couldn't do that without going through that, process.
Right. Yeah. I thought you were going to say accent.
And using the Z equilibration.
And doing, well, that's it. But that's important, right? Because, so this is, I think this is a key in terms of what, like, people don't realize how much business relies on that understanding of yourself. Like, the whole premise of Evolve at the end of the day and our whole business program is that it starts and ends with you as the leader and the mindset of yourself as the leader. And if you are holding on to someone because you think it's going to cause yourself more pleasure than pain, or more happiness than sadness, or more good than bad, or more rich than poor, then you're delusional, because at the end of the day, it's going to cause both. So when you have the tools behind you to understand that, to balance these things out, and then not to let those things get in the way of you achieving your vision and your mission, and then also assisting that person to go and achieve their vision and the mission, then, you know, you're really stunting your growth if you're not working on yourself. You're not working on your mindset. At the end of the day, the buck stops with you as the business person, you know. And if you're somebody who wants to step up and move up and get ahead, then you have to be doing the work on yourself. You can't – it's not just purely it is nuts and bolts, like it is the processes and it is the system, but it takes somebody who doesn't have – these subconscious loyalties in the way so that they can even see that, what I mean? And I think that's really important. I think that's what I really – like, we notice here straight away with you, Nicola, how focused you were and how dedicated you were to letting those things – like to sorting those things out, knowing that those things were going to be there, and through life in general. We're meant to – have, like you said, a new level of problem will show up, but then you embrace that new level of problem with a new understanding of yourself, and then also with an understanding of how to balance that out so that you can take it further. You know, you don't have to you work on that, you deal with that, you move on, and then you know that in order to grow, you're going to get another level of problem, and now you're just embracing that level. And the whole point of that is, and I think this is very much you, is having that end in mind. You have to have that, you know, that vision, that outcome in mind. Otherwise, you will always be looking down at your feet and the step-by-step process instead of looking at the horizon and going towards that outcome for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, business is always going to have problems.
Yeah.
And when you're caught in the petty crap, you just can't move forward.
Yeah.
And I felt like we'd been there for a little while. And the worst thing about it was everyone was looking at me, waiting for me to do something. And yeah. I was just, and I wasn't, because I had a sense, of, like you said, a sense of loyalty to somebody.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, that person wasn't happy anyway. So, one, I was robbing my team of, you know, a great working environment, which we've now got, and I was robbing that other person of being able to go off and do what they really wanted to do, and you know, and myself of. Of knowing course. Full well everyone was going, when are you going to do something about this?
So what has the outcome been for yourself then in terms of coming back, doing this, working on Evolve, working on your business, sorting out the loyalty stuff out? What has been the outcome for your business? What have you noticed? Because people, like, there may still be some people out there thinking, okay, culture is not that big a deal, but I think most people get it now. But in sorting out the culture, what has that done to the bottom line and to the outcome of what you want in your business? Obviously, you don't have to go specifics.
I never had to replace that person, which was incredible.
Really?
Because, no. Shit. And they were a really their job was like the job, was so that person thought. So in the end, I never had to replace them because the others all stepped up and said, you know, let's just give this a go and see if we can do it ourselves. And now we're doing better financially. I mean, COVID did have its problems for us, but that's another story. But in terms of debt collection, COVID wasn't that bad. Because people had money.
Yeah. Right.
So while the banks and everyone turned around and said, well, we're not going to collect off anybody, and the government said, well, we'll give everyone money, they were able to go, well, I want to pay down my debt. So at the beginning it was great. We had all this money coming in to pay down for people wanting to pay down debt. And in a way it kind of did go on a little bit of a roller coaster there in the middle of it. But again, that 100% came down to my mindset. That wasn't my team.
Yeah.
I'd kind of like lost the plot a little bit in letting the whole COVID thing go, oh, COVID's wrecked my business and things like that. And then it wasn't until the JobKeeper finished. And then we had a bad month in April. And then when that finished, I went to the girls, I'm going to go home, do the comms for the next month, because I have my key performance indicators every month that I do, and I hand them off to everyone in the organisation who's got a responsibility, everyone has a responsibility financially. And I was doing a Z equilibration on it, and I got halfway through the equilibration and I was like, oh, this is all COVID's fault. And then went, oh, my God, I've really been blaming COVID. And I got really super clear on what my thoughts and feelings around that were, and came into the office the next day and said, you know, I really apologize to you guys. This is what I've been doing. And they go, yeah, we knew that. Bugger.
Right.
Of course they knew it.
Right, right.
And then since then, so May we had a bumper month. And then this month is looking to be bumper again. That's in the debt collection. In the finance side, that's still warming itself up. There's still going to be a lot of pain come out because, the finance companies haven't all gone, well, let's go and knock on doors and talk to people. They're wanting to still be nice.
Right.
That will end, I'm sure.
And then tell me, so – in your business, like as a debt collection agency, I mean, for some people, they think, oh my God, that must be such a terrible job. How do you find, how long have you been doing it?
This is 17 years.
Shit. And then, so how do you find, I mean, how is your approach to people who are in debt? You know, because you must come across some really like, tough situations.
We do come across some tough situations. We come across some people that are quite rude, obviously.
Yeah.
But we're here, like one of the outcomes in the legacy map that we do with
Evolve,
with Evolve, was we had to go and work out exactly what business we're in. And for BCA Debt, we realised, well, the team came up with the fact that we're in the business of helping people sort out their money solutions through fair and ethical communication.
Right.
And we've got that on our website now, and we've done our team values. We'd like to go back and do some more values around how we treat the people that we're talking to every day, and set some values around that and make sure that we can pin them back to what our vision is and where we want the business to go and how we want to treat people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we don't really – the guys don't really see themselves as debt collectors. They see themselves more as people helping other people to
important.
Yeah.
That's
magical. That's great.
Really, and, you know, like I was listening to one of the conversations happening today, and there was a guy who had a debt and he was disputing it. And all along, you know, like my manager, Natasha, she has maintained her dignity through the entire conversation, even though she was getting sworn at. And, you know, they've got the seven human needs on the wall, so they're looking at that and they're figuring out what need that person is requires in that conversation at that point in time. So they're the other things that we're wanting to do is like hook the conversations to the seven human needs that we go through with Evolve.
Right.
So, and not only that, like our clients, we've got, sometimes we don't get a great outcome for our client because people just don't have money or for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And we'll often get emails saying, thank you, you've done a great job. And we're like, oh, we didn't get their money for them. But they still are happy with the work they've done because the guys go above and beyond.
Yeah, And
I think to get an outcome.
I think that's really, really, really important for people to understand. But, I mean, debt collection, when I was young and where I come from was, you know, people lost kneecaps and like it was crazy, crazy, crazy stuff that happened back then. But I think that now, you know, it is a process of, you know, being empathetic and sympathetic and understanding that, you know, a lot of the time these bigger companies like these banks of fraternities are preying on, like I was looking at the stats the other day, like $35 billion in Australian debt is in credit card. That means every child that's born into Australia right now is born into $1,500 worth of credit card debt. That's fucking insane. That's like,
that's insane.
It's insane. And so these fraternities and banks and organizations, they do a lot of the time, you know, it's a system. They're preying. They do prey on people who are just, you know, they're, you know, buy this and you're going to feel better. Buy this and you're going to look better. Buy this and you're going to, you know, so people just go crazy because they're so unhappy and they're trying to buy their way out of unhappiness, you know. And having a debt collection agency that understands that and is able to be empathetic and understand and go over and above, because when you give people over and above, they know that you give a shit. Mm. Do you know what I mean? They know that you care.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I was going to say that's why it's so important, because to have your own system, you know, to have your own system with managing your money, and that's why we're so inspired about helping people with that money aspect, because it's actually really not that hard to manage money.
No.
It's like the easiest thing to master. And people,
it's the funnest thing to do.
And it's fun, you know, because it's, you become creative, you become inspired, and so many people are caught in the cycle of just being so panicky and so, you know, I don't know, unorganized or committed to the lineage of that poverty mentality. That's why that it makes it hard for them, but it doesn't have to be that hard, you know.
So tell me, what would you say to someone that's in debt, or
that's a good question.
You know, what would you say to someone that has somebody knocking on their door or is in debt? What would you say to them?
In terms, from what aspect?
Well, in terms of, if you could give them some advice. Yeah, if you could give them some advice.
Your knowledge around money.
Oh, okay. The best advice I would give them is to mastermind and money.
That's so good. We didn't even plan that.
Right,
so
answer.
Good
answer.
I know, but I've taken so many people, I've talked to so many people about mastermind and money, because it's a system, you know, like
100%.
You don't even have to build it. You guys tell us the system. All you have to do is go home and put it in place.
Yeah.
But I guess at the end of the day, I would just say to somebody, look at the choices that you're making with your money.
Yeah.
Because you can always see a pattern.
Yeah.
Now, we call them Hollywood. So we get a lot of Hollywood people.
Yeah.
They want to, you know, you go out and you can see that, you know, they're so-called pillars of the community and they've got all of the stuff, but, you know, they're just being, they haven't got any substance behind it. And that's really sad.
Yeah. And do you guys do reclaims and stuff? Like, would you go and reclaim jet skis and cars and stuff, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we do repossessions.
Wow.
We repossess houses, cars, boats, anything.
Wow. Yep. And then what happens when you have you a yard? Do you put that stuff in the yard? No, I'm serious. I want to know.
No. They usually go to an auction house.
So you take
she
it straight to the auction.
Store them in her backyard.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a big enough backyard.
Mitch, do you need a jet ski?
Well, I've got I could put a jet ski in the swimming pool, I suppose. No.
So okay.
Yeah,
so
I know. And we get people ask us all the time. Oh, if you see this car or this house or whatever, it's like, no, there's a process. We're like so strictly governed.
Yeah, it is. Is it? It's super governed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. Wow, that must be tough. Jesus.
Yeah, it must be actually.
Yeah. It's a system, but
yeah, that's
but
true.
It takes away any like emotion because it's just a system.
Mm.
You know, the funny thing is, years ago, right? I remember we had it. We used to when I had one of my courier companies, right? This is a long time ago, I was a kid. We used to have twice in that time period because we used to have so much money owing into us. It was just crazy, right? And the problem was all of our accounts were tiny. So we might have a business that only has a $400 account, but they just won't pay the $400. But when you got 50 of them, you're in trouble. And then so there would be times like we'd be owed in the door like $3 million. And we'd have a sheriff knocking on the door. And the sheriff, you can't fuck with the sheriff, right? You can't fuck with the sheriff. The sheriff has more power than like they can do anything the fuck they want. So they'll walk in and go, right, we're taking that computer, that house, that guy. That's what they can do. So I remember thinking, you know, there were times back there where I think, you know, I can fully understand how people get themselves into that situation. Mm. And then through the years in business, especially in business, like I've watched people get bankrupted because large construction companies just literally refuse to pay them.
Yeah.
No, you've done the job. We don't care. You've poured all the cement. We don't give a shit. We're just not going to pay it. And then these guys lose 80 employees and they lose, you know, businesses and houses and cars and that happens. But the funny thing is whenever we would pay the sheriff, the amount of relief that you got, you felt, okay, I've no more pressure like that. But also, holy shit, once I pulled my finger out and I got my shit together and I started speaking to people and I, you know, once I lent into the pain that I was trying to avoid by not paying the fucking bill... Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Once I lent into it and I did what life was actually asking me to do, which is just get your shit together, make the calls you got to make, speak to the people you got to speak to. If someone owes you money, you got to go down and get the money.
100%. But even just from the other's perspective, you know, when I work with people, they want to dig their head in the sand about their money. And no matter how bad it is or that they think it is, as soon as they just get truthful about it, you can work with that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as soon as you're pretending or avoiding or whatever, that is just all your energy goes into that and it ends up that you're just worse off. As soon as you just focus on it and look at it, doesn't matter how bad it is, it's always manageable.
Yeah.
And it's the same that way too, you know, in terms of what you're saying there.
Break it down.
Break it down.
Get proper perspective. Yeah. Like you say to people, okay, you think you're fucking completely broke, right? Okay, so let's just do a quick exercise. Okay, how much do you think your watch is worth? Oh, it's worth $400. Okay. How much do you think, like if we were to sell your shoes tomorrow, what do you think we'd get? Probably $50. Okay. Now, if I went to your house and you got some paintings here and you go around and slowly but surely you get perspective, they suddenly realize they've actually got tens of thousands of dollars, in some cases even $1 million, $1.5 million. They just had no perspective on it because they're so super emotional about this tiny amount, you know, that they owe. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perspective.
We do that at the end of the quarter. You know how you drive your savings every quarter?
Yeah.
So I go through and I've got a spreadsheet and I go through and I add up everything and I get values on all of the things that we own, all of our assets, all of our good debt.
Yep.
Yeah.
And work out. So I've got a bottom line so I can look at it and go, okay, that's okay. Right. That's good. Yep. I feel good about myself.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I learned through doing letting it go and putting stuff on your mission statement, I go through my mission statement, I go, am I achieving what I really want to achieve on my mission statement?
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't looked at the mission statement for a while. And then when I went back to it, I went, oh, I can tick that off, tick that off, tick that off. So like when you're actually putting stuff down on paper and even if you put it down and you don't look at it for 12 months, not right. saying that I do that with my mission statement, but I had done that a little while ago. I had set some goals and went back and had a look at them and went, oh, my God, I achieved that like ages ago. And right. here I am. I haven't set a new one. Mm. And that was where I was like, I think that's where I was hitting that glass ceiling
thing
where, you know, like you don't set the new goals so you don't get past that.
Yeah.
That place. And you've still got this goal hanging around that you haven't, that you've done. You've already achieved it, but you needed to
go back and check
set
it
a
off.
New one. Mm. So I love my Super 7.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it keeps you on track.
Yeah. Each one of my Super 7 is a Super 7.
Good.
That's so cool. Oh, well, we've had a great time talking to you, Nicola. I was going to say, if there was one thing you could say to the Nicola that first came along and did this, what would you say to her? What would one piece of advice be to her, that young girl 10 years ago?
10 years ago, yeah, so young. At the beginning, I would say that it's not going to be easy, but you have to just be resilient and keep doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
It's the work that makes the difference.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
100%. Knowing the work and not doing the work is not knowing the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people think that they know it but they don't do it, but then that they actually don't know it because they're not doing it. So it needs both, right?
Yeah, doing the work is definitely the key to the success of being part of the program.
Mm-hmm. Cool, Nicola. So it's been great. We're so glad we could get you on here. It was been absolutely fantastic talking.
I had
to
a ball.
Yeah, there you go. It's been lovely. Tell our husband of yours we said g'day.
Yes,
I will. So he's gone off. He's trying to buy a new car.
Is he? Oh yeah, nice boys car. And their toys, baby. Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly.
Nice chatting with you, darling.
Thanks, pal.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.